Hello and welcome to Dap Happy episode 14. This is the podcast, videocast from the good people at Dap Radar. I'm John, I'm your host, and joining me is Elia. How's it going, Elia?
Hi, thank you for having me.
Say that every week. So as ever, there's been plenty to discuss in the world of dApps. And as we did, I think, as we have done more recently, we're going to be talking, I think, mainly about sort of dApps with NFTs attached to them, non-fungible tokens. So we've seen a lot of activity around that. And that seems to be the kind of the latest kind of place of activity. But yeah, I guess we'll see where the conversation takes us. So Elia, kick off. You can kick us off. So you've been getting into Hashmask. Do you want to give us a brief overview of Hashmasks?
Hashmask, I'm not going to be able to tell you the exact number that's out there, but it's effectively it's kind of a play on art and scarcity and collectibles, right? So there's a limited amount of these Hashmasks, and there's kind of the novelty concept here is that you get this hash mask and it's an image designed by some artist, and then you have these tokens, NCT tokens, that when you contribute them, you are allowed to kind of change the name of your NFT token. And as a result, what ends up happening is that the resultant art piece, right, is a combination of two things: this somewhat randomized image and the name, right? And that opens up a lot of possibilities, right? So one, I've started to see people kind of take them as commercial opportunities, right? You can start having the names represent things. You can start, there are also error variations, right? Where people wanted to do one thing and write their name, they had a typo and now it's another thing, right? It also creates kind of, like two different secondary markets, right? Where you have the image, the NFT mask, market, and then you also have the NCT market, right? Because you can't change the name without the NCT, and you need the masks to be able to mine NCTs. And the kind of the mining schedule is kind of it's kind of long, right? So like you could theoretically see people kind of try to kind of accumulate masks, mine NCT, and kind of dominate certain aspects of the naming segment. But the fact that there is now kind of a unique element that's user driven is actually pretty cool. It's kind of one of the first kind of instances with these kind of mass market collectibles where the user gets to kind of take part in the creative process. They've been immensely popular. I'm surprised at how popular they've been. They kind of did this interesting sale where kind of they subdivided the masks into kind of subgroups and did a sale at different prices throughout. I think it got sold out within 2 weeks.
No, much quicker than that. No, it sold out within definitely within a week. And the last three went for 100 ETH, so it's over $120,000 each.
And it started at 0.1 ETH, right? Yeah. So like the price appreciation theoretically that creates is pretty astounding to me. It remains to be seen how much of that is hype and how much of that is going to be supported, because I think a lot of people who missed out on CryptoPunks have seen the sales generated by CryptoPunks and have kind of gotten don't want to miss that train again, right? Whether people do need to kind of realize though that CryptoPunks is a community and kind of a following that's been built over years. This is kind of, so to replicate that level, even to a degree, in terms of kind of the following, the market, the kind of the community, I don't think is kind of a matter of just creating a novel idea, but it's really interesting to see how, the sales went really quick without much mainstream media coverage, right? CryptoPunks have gotten, a fair amount of mainstream media coverage. Hashmask just sort of happened.
Very much so. Absolutely. It just kind of appeared, didn't they?
It will be very interesting to see, what the kind of sustainability there is, like why, like how much are they able to like kind of keep that, and also like what, like will they be used in kind of some of the ways we're speculating, and kind of how will the rest of the communities take them in terms of kind of the acceptance level. So, you know, it will be, you know, there's a lot of different angles to look at in terms of HashNest, but, you know, there's a lot of excitement right now. And, you know, we'll, as with pretty much anything in crypto, like real evaluation happens after some of the initial excitement subsides, and you can kind of take a, you know, kind of a more of a macro view and see, you know, what has happened. But it's definitely exciting that, you know, we get to see more user engagement. I think that, you know, that's one of the aspects of NFTs that is some of the more kind of underappreciated. I think outside of maybe async art, there's not a lot of projects right now that are actively engaging users in the creative process. And I think that, you know, this kind of opens up to show just, you know, how much demand for that there potentially is.
Yeah, I think it is interesting. I think it is a good, or maybe not a good, but it is a kind of a classic example of a whole bunch of things coming into alignment. So you kind of have the history of things like CryptoPunks, and I guess that's the main one really. And then you have the kind of the culture of kind of people getting more aware of how NFTs can be valued or potentially valued. You have the dynamic nature, which I think is the cleverest thing of the changing the names and having this kind of this token economy that will kind of change over time. And you have like almost like you have yield farming, because you're farming the name changing tokens. So you could just hold your hash mask, and every 6 months you'd have enough tokens to change the name. Mm-hmm. Although I think when I looked at it earlier on, it was even at that stage it was basically costing $300 worth of tokens to change the name, and that's obviously gone up now. So it becomes interesting the kind of economics around, you know, even if you could change the name, why would you do it if you could sell those tokens on? So there's some interesting stuff there. The tokens last for 10 years. You have the naming thing. So only one thing can be named. You know, only one hash mask can have a certain name. So there's one we're looking at here. There's one Buddha. You can't have any other one called Buddha. So potentially people who wanted to call their hash mask Buddha would have to buy the Buddha one, change its name to change. I mean, that's probably getting a little bit carried away. But there's quite, it cuts across a lot of different ways. Now, probably most of those will not be sort of viably played out game theories. You know, they won't be interesting results. And I think the main thing we're seeing at the moment is just pricing is clearly bonkers. I think the cheapest one is on bid for 0.5 ETH, where obviously, you know, some people have bought a lot for 0.1 ETH. So I guess over time we'll maybe see the price start to come down, and that will, because at the moment they're kind of overpriced for anyone who would now want to get into the market. It's just too expensive, particularly with ETH going up again. It is. I think it is a pointer, and I guess, you know, it is a pointer maybe not to mass market adoption of these NFTs, because, you know, we did a video on the Dat Radar YouTube. I did one yesterday, and already there's comments like, people pay thousands of dollars for this, looks like a scam. Well, you know, that's kind of the mass market reaction to it. It's just like, who are these nutcases sort of thing. And it is interesting, but it is interesting that with CryptoPunks, there were 10,000 of them, and there's only ever been 1,000 wallets interacting with that project. Whereas HashMask, there's 16,000, so slightly more, but already there's 3,300 owners. So you can already see there is still demand for these sort of projects that you know, there's more, not that wallets are necessarily individual people, but it's much, it's three times, the community much earlier, but it's three times bigger than CryptoPunks, so.
There's an interesting dynamic there that you kind of bring up, is that how much of a community is kind of built around this. I actually own one of the hash masks, so I was able to get into that. But you know, with, you know, if you compare, you know, you compared it to you know, CryptoPunks, but there are other projects that, you know, try to play along this, you know, theme, right? There's Avastars, for example, right? But Avastars have a lot more of the individual, individual NFT tokens, and they have a lot less hype around them than, let's say, CryptoPunks. CryptoPunks have gotten past the stage of just pure collectibles and have now become what I would probably consider to be an investment asset, right? When you see, you've probably seen the sale of like one of the CryptoPunks got acquired by the Flamingo DAO, right? And I would expect that more and more of these things will start to happen, right? We've seen DeFi invest pretty significantly, I think, into Axie Infinity in terms of like the individual NFT. We see CryptoPunks getting that sort of treatment. I think that we're going to start to see certain collectibles kind of elevate, gravitate towards a level of investment asset, right? In traditional industries, you have, you know, your equities, your bonds, and then you also have kind of your alternative investment assets, right? Like art, like collectibles, like rare cars, rare other things, right? And those are terms, you know, those are legitimate investment assets for certain strategies. And so I think in the kind of the digital crypto realm, I think we're starting to see some of the assets kind of gravitate into that realm.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, it is interesting when it's, I mean, these things kind of start off with just, I guess, kind of people in crypto who are messing around with these things. And obviously some people in crypto, who, if you've been around long enough, you actually have now quite a lot of wealth. So there's a sort of, they kind of have a playfulness, which is kind of over time scaled up into something that is a bit more serious. And then, and there's those guys like Whaleshark or Pranksy, you know, they make big moves into markets. Then that kind of attracts people outside of the market who kind of understand the value of kind of how markets are created and that kind of bottom up. And I guess then you start to see, I guess there's one level of, they are proper kind of investment funds, but they're crypto investment funds. So they've kind of grown up in a different way to a, you know, a non-crypto fund who would look at the risk of being involved with anything in blockchain is just, for those guys, is still much bigger than the opportunity. And potentially there's still regulatory issues around, you know, especially if you're using someone else's money, not your own money, then there's obviously issues around how you can invest, investors' money.
That's a separate conversation altogether.
While we're on I should say before we get on to NBA Top Shot, have you named your hash mask?
No, I have not yet, and I might hold off for that for a little bit. I want to see kind of for me this was kind of just an experiment. I became aware of the hash mask and kind of. It was just, I wanted to be kind of a part of this thing. I didn't have a chance to become kind of a part of the CryptoPunks at the very early stage. So I wanted to be a part of this and kind of just see how it evolves more than anything else, right? Mm. So I've held off naming my hash mask at this point. I want to see kind of how these things actually end up being used. And for now, yeah, it just kind of sits there.
And were you, because not the only reason I didn't get involved, but I just artistically I didn't like them very much. So were you happy with the one you got? Because obviously one of the things about the initial setup was you bought one, but you didn't know what you're buying.
You don't know which one, yeah.
So were you happy?
I haven't even looked at it yet. So it just sits there in the wallet. I haven't even looked at it yet. It just sits there in the wallet. The thing for me is that there's going to be an analysis at some point done, similar to how, you know, I've seen some of the kind of the more involved users in the Avastars community kind of do an analysis of like rarity of features, because I think this is kind of one of the kind of less talked about components. And I really like that, you know, you brought up the aesthetics of it, because even if you kind of just talk about the rarity component of the hash mask, right? Nobody really talks about that. It's more of like, oh, look at the price, right? Mm. But hash masks go a little bit deeper than just, you know, the naming component, right? They're different images. They have different rarities. They have their own kind of attributes and such. And so I think that we will see kind of the market start to recognize that and evolve over that. Once we kind of get past this initial hype. I've even seen on Twitter, I think it was Bantag that did it, user Bantag that kind of tried to combine all of the individual images hash mask into one single one. So that reminded me of the Avastar component, which is why I kind of keep floating my in my head right now. But I think we're going to see more potentially with these kind of NFTs. And I think that that will mark, at least in part, which kind of which ecosystems will grow and evolve and kind of sustain their value. Because they will need to get incorporated and integrated into other things that are happening within the overall community, right? Whether it's DeFi dApps and allow them to be kind of used as collateral, or they're used in gaming, or they're used in art fairs within Decentraland or CryptoBox. So, but these collectibles, we need to be shown, they need to be integrated, they need to be used in other places. I see a number of different uses for all of these potentially. How the developer community and the community as a whole will choose to kind of play on this will kind of determine, I think, a lot of the value in the long term.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to something a little bit different. Let me bring it up. NBA Top Shot. I don't know how much you're into basketball. I am clueless.
I'm very much into basketball, but I actually haven't. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I grew up in Boston. It's very hard to kind of grow up in Boston and not be a big, although I ended up growing up a Lakers fan, but that's a whole other subject. Big basketball fan. And I really enjoy from kind of right now, from a very outside perspective, what's been happening with NBA Top Shot, because besides being kind of a sports fan, I was also, you know, growing up, I was a card collector, a sports card collector. So for me, this is huge. You know, this is really exciting to watch this sort of evolution. I haven't had a chance to kind of get in on one of the drops. It's not super.
How are you not into this? How are you not all over this?
it's not terribly easy, especially to match up on the time zones, because this is kind of you got to be there and you got to be on time. And I think the last one, they had kind of either the website went down or they were oversubscribed on one of them, because I think the email went out where they were trying to kind of do it through email or something like that. But I think this is really cool. I think that, you know, Flow's been doing a great job on at least on the concept.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is a bit of background, I suppose. So the company behind it is called Dapper Labs, based out of Vancouver. And I guess famously, before they were called Dapper Labs, they were Axie and Zen, and they came up with Crypto Kitties. So they're kind of the lodestone of a lot of this NFT kind of stuff. Crypto Kitties launched end of 2017, saw a very big spike in activity, because that was when the first all-time high for Ethereum and Bitcoin happened. And then Crypto Kitties kind of went away. There was still a hardcore of a few hundred kind of involved every day. Gas prices on Ethereum last year effectively kind of maybe not killed it off, but certainly it came to a hiatus. But Dapper Labs have always been fairly sure that they wanted to do their own thing. So they were kind of sure that Ethereum probably wasn't the best thing for the experience they wanted. So they've raised a ton of money, I think almost $70 million. They've come up with their own blockchain called Flow, which is it's a very different kind of consensus mechanic, but I guess broadly speaking, it's designed to be fast and have no gas, and to some degree is less secure. I mean, I'm not going to go into detail, even if I understood them. But so they come up with this new thing, and the first thing they launched was this NBA Top Shot kind of collectible. There should be a game based on it as well, but I imagine that might be delayed now because the thing's been so successful. And basically all it is these little video clips. So you have video clips from the NBA season. And obviously they can go back in history as the project kind of expands. And you have these drops, and they're all basically labeled by the player who does the thing, whether it's a basket or a block or an assist or something. And they have different rarities, and they all have different serial numbers, and they get sold in packs, as you said there. So and then once you have them, obviously it's a marketplace, so people can trade amongst themselves. You can build sets, so they basically all the moments fit into a set somewhere. If you want to kind of start collecting some of the sets, if you collect them and holding them for certain periods of time, you get rewarded with a special card that that's not in the pack. So there's a few gamified things there. What's interesting for me, who knows nothing about basketball, but knew there was a game coming. So I bought a few packs back in October just to see what it was like. And it was the first project on the Flow blockchain, which I was interested in because that's designed for sort of gaming and And I know there's a lot of, they've signed a lot of deals and there's a lot of stuff coming on the Flow blockchain. So I thought I would get myself ready, even though I knew nothing about basketball. So I bought some of these packs and kind of tried to work out what was going on and learn a bit about basketball, I suppose, or some of the players, and built a few sets. And then literally nothing happened in October, November, December. Nothing happened really. The prices of some things went up, some went down. It wasn't very clear what was going on. Got into a few arguments before Christmas with some of these big, there's one guy who spent, as a part of a consortium, spent $50,000 buying these packs, and he was saying how much money he was making. And we had an argument about about how you would actually kind of work out the price of these cards if you're trying to sell them. And then literally the second week of January, the whole thing blew up. I'm not quite sure kind of why, what the exact spark was, but suddenly you just saw people on Twitter, I spent $100,000 on a LeBron James, and it went to all-time, you know, kind of all-time highs it was doing. I think at one point did about $4 or $5 or even $6 million in a day of trading. It's dropped back down now to about kind of $1 or $2 million. But it's by far and away now the biggest NFT project. So it's gone, CryptoKitties was the biggest with about $29 million of all-time trading. I think NBA Top Shot now is well into the 40s of millions of dollars. And they can't keep the servers up. They can't. the problem is not getting people interested in it. The problem is kind of trying to encourage people not to be too interested in it. So it's kind of really interesting in the sense that I think as a project, it's much less interesting than Hash Masks, which has these interesting artistic sort of things going on there. NBA Top Shop is very simple. That you, here's some real life basketball players doing real life things. People have their favorite players, favorite teams. Here's a marketplace where you can trade them. Off you go, you know, go and have fun. And it's kind of the lowest hanging fruit, really, I think. But it's just been amazing how these things, you know, some of the cards that were priced $10 have gone up to $300. And I guess
for me, with adoption, I think that the biggest thing is kind of looking at where traditional markets had the kind of the need intrinsically, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me, although I grew up collecting baseball cards, right? For me, kind of that transition seems pretty logical, right? Like the market exists for sports collectibles already. You don't have to invent it. You don't have to explain to people why things are valuable. They've been doing it all the time. Mm-hmm. If you create it and you create kind of simple liquidity mechanics, there's kind of demand for it already, right? The digital aspect of it, the fact that now you can make it kind of into kind of a video component, makes it really cool. My concerns around this is that, one, it looks like right now it's kind of locked to the kind of decentralized Top Shot website, right? Like you have your native mm-hmm. marketplace, but you really, like, you can't, like, the whole point of NFTs, right, is I can go out, take my NFT and go do whatever I want with it, right? Not only is Flow kind of outside of the entire Ethereum ecosystem, right, but the NBA Top Shot right now is kind of localized to its own self. But on the other hand, the UX, as you're showing right now on screen, is fantastic, right? Like, and that's really what you want for retail, right? This is a simple to understand retail use case. If you do it right, you don't have to invent demand. You don't have to kind of just give the people what they want, right? And this is something people want. So I think from kind of the perspective of adoption and the perspective of kind of introducing people to blockchain and NFTs, this is brilliant. And, you know, we see that with the number of kind of traders, right? If you look at the statistics, on NBA Top Shot, right? I've actually started to see demand for it rise earlier than you would say, because if you were following it right as like the NBA finals were happening and stuff, people were talking about it already, right? So I think that, you know, with the kind of some of it might be tracking the actual kind of game. Some of it also is the fact that some of the big whales came in, right? Once the big whales came in, right, everybody starts following, right? Because, you know, whatever pranks he goes towards, right, instantly gets attention, right? And he's been, you know, one of the bigger, I think, whales, you know, taking part in the NBA Top Shot ecosystem. Mm-hmm. But I think just from the perspective of Dapper Labs and Flow, I think this is, you know, this is a brilliant beta test.
Yeah, it is. And it is interesting because, you know, I don't think they expected this I guess they would have planned for this sort of thing, but I don't think they expected it to go quite as easy, because it was very clear. There was a very specific period of days that it really did get, you know, amazingly big. But yeah, they've got a deal with UFC, so Ultimate Fighting Championship. No idea. There's been no detail about what they're doing, if it's a similar sort of thing. You know, they've got a deal with Dr. Zeus again. I think there's a bit more. That's a bit more of a kind of a not breeding really, but obviously taking the characters of Dr. Zeus and kind of mixing up the colors of them. Yeah, I think they've signed a lot more deals that they haven't kind of spoken about yet. So they have quite a lot of these kind of branded, real world branded IPs that they're going to be building things around. And I think something like NBA Top Shop kind of proves you don't have to be too clever about it. You don't have to actually have these kind of gamified mechanics or these kind of naming things or anything cleverer than just here's a bunch of stuff you can trade. If it's as long as you're in that first wave. You know, I think the stuff that's launching this time next year over time the brands you're using become more important. So I think Dr. Zeus, you know, if that launched this time next year, then it's going to be hard to attract attention. And interesting, you know, there was a baseball game that launched like 2 years ago on the blockchain, on the Ethereum blockchain. Mm-hmm. And it was just very, very complicated as a game. It was just, it got some sort of traction, but it didn't never got more than a few thousand kind of users and stuff. And so it is interesting. There is a kind of right time, and obviously they've got their own technology, so they built it out in a way where the blockchain bit, and they don't talk about blockchain at all. They just kind of talk about the fact you can buy and sell, and I think at the moment they do have you can cash out, but only if you've got a US bank account. So there are, if you mentioned, lots of these kind of restrictions until their blockchain is kind of fully developed and fully decentralized. So at the moment it's not, but I guess it, for me, it's just a vindication of I guess what we all expected. Otherwise we wouldn't be in this kind of line of work, is that just adding blockchains to things just allows value to accrue, and almost like people make their own game on it. People choose their favorite stars. And I've noticed on Twitter now, people are like, these are the top 10 rookies you should be collecting, or all this sort of stuff. And the fact you have real money in there makes it, you know, obviously kind of more serious. And in some ways causes problems, because you have, you know, I'm sure at some point there will be people from a legal point of view kind of looking at it, and I'm sure there will be some sort of fraud stuff going on there, you know, because that always kind of happens. But in a sense, that those are problems you have to have in order for the industry to kind of be successful. And I think in a sense that's good. It's good that I think Dapper Labs will deal with those things better than potentially lots of other smaller crypto companies would do.
I mean, in a lot of ways, like, the number of problems would be a lot smaller than in traditional collectible industry, right? It's there's like, it's a lot harder to make a fake, NBA Top Shot card than it is to make a fake kind of collectibles physical card, right? There's a whole kind of separate industry that works, you know, around ratings and kind of verifying kind of, you know, the condition of a card, you know, and things like that. So I think there's a lot of problems that, you know, a blockchain and NFT solve for the industry that needed to be solved. And again, this is kind of, we're getting finally into kind of the area of kind of industry evolution, where companies are starting to look at what the market actually wants. You know, for a number of years, people were just sort of playing around with the technology, figuring out what it can do, building cool things. And yes, there are some followings, and yes, there were some successes. But at this point, right, like Dapper Labs, I feel like they're looking at the mass market, and they're like, okay, what is the mass market using? What are the problems it's facing right now, right? Like, what can we give them? So I think that may be kind of a sign of a new approach by some of these companies, because, you know, we've seen kind of a number of kind of bigger players kind of watch from the sidelines. And this could be a sign of, look what you can do so quickly by just kind of integrating. You don't have to change the business. You don't have to change the market. You can just kind of improve it, right? And, you know, some people in the industry have been saying for a while, you know, blockchain is a great instrument. It's a tool. Use it for what you need, right? And this is kind of one of those, you know, really successful use cases, at least initially, right? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, blockchain was used as a tool to enhance an already existing market.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. I guess it would be, it's, what's interesting now is you can kind of hear the trying to do a metaphor here. You can hear the contracts being signed with basically every football, every sports organization trying to do a similar thing. You just imagine this is so rare.
Yeah. So Ram's been trying to do it for a little while now. Nearly as successful, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, let's have a look.
In the short term, right? I like about SoRare is that SoRare is integrating something that is huge in the concept, right? So I don't know if you're at all involved with fantasy sports. I played fantasy baseball, fantasy football, fantasy basketball at one point. It's a huge community. And they're trying to do this with soccer, which is, you know, I believe a smaller community, at least in terms of hype. But it proves that, you know, you can integrate these kind of NFTs and give users something to do besides collecting, right? And engage them in with the real sport, right? Because it's a really important connection for these collectibles to what happens in the real, in the real world, in the real games, right? And that ability for fans to connect and to have kind of to have ties to kind of their favorite clubs, their favorite players is really important. And so from that perspective, I really like what SoRare is doing. And I think that we may start to see more of that from other projects. The interesting component about NFT, if it's done right, is that it can be integrated into other projects, right? So we can see other things pop up that start to use, you know, potentially NBA Top Shot, right? And this is why right now, right, I need to see from an analytics perspective, right? I need to see NBA Top Shot be able to be integrated with things on Flow outside of their, you know, their little ecosystem. Because if that happens, you know, then we can start to see more things, right? Like right now, all of these projects are starting to they feel like they need to build out their entire ecosystem. But DeFi has shown that the one of the beauties of blockchain is composability. And I expect to see that start to see that with NFTs as well.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think I don't think Dapper Labs is going to be allowing allowing their massive hit collectible to be going onto Ethereum anytime soon. But it is interesting that they, you know, well, actually one of the next, probably the next big thing for the Flow blockchain is they're bridging CryptoKitties. So they're taking CryptoKitties. If you want to take your Ethereum based CryptoKitties, you can take them onto Flow, and there's going to be they don't go into 3D, but they're not just static images. They have this kind of like an animated component to them. And they have started doing that, actually. They've currently got a project going on that if you own a CryptoKitty before a certain period of time in January, you basically get a free NBA Top Shot moment if you connect your, basically set up an account or connect your Ethereum wallet. So they're kind of putting the breadcrumbs in to get, you know what still is a massive amount of NFTs, CryptoKitties, and bring those over to and kind of reinvigorate, you know, what was at one point a very interesting project in its own sense and with a big fan base. And as soon as you take away gas fees, I guess you'll see a reinvigoration of that as well. So that's an important component, though.
That's a very important component, because that's not just, you know, Dapper Labs doing it, right? Axie Infinity, I believe, this week launched Ronin, right? Yeah. And they will kind of begin their process of moving their ecosystem over to Ronin. If we see more and more of these projects go towards their own chains, right, it kind of builds kind of the case for new companies coming in, start looking towards either building their own stack, right? Or going towards, you know, the Nears, the Polkadots, the Cosmos of the world, right? Or Flow, right? And that may kind of create an interesting paradigm where, you know, Ethereum gets kind of the DeFi to itself, right? But other use cases move on to other chains. And I think that, you know, a few years ago, you know, people were talking about the multi-chain paradigm where, you know, certain use cases would, you know, gravitate towards certain chains. And we might start to see the kind of the beginnings of that now.
Oh yeah, no, I would entirely say that we're exactly seeing that now. I think what's interesting is for these other new blockchains, I think they have to sort of decide you know, who, what kind of areas they're going to target? Are they, are, you know, are they, because I think technically, obviously, you can run anything, run any sort of dApp on any sort of blockchain, give or take. Obviously, there are some design decisions around that. But I think it's almost like they have to kind of think, you know, are we going to go for, you know, every blockchain, I think, over time will end up having a sort of a flavor, a kind of community around it, a certain type of user it attracts. And that, you know, that will attract more of those sort of dApps. I mean, it's kind of, you know, a bit like in retail, in brick and mortar retail, is you tend to have little areas where here are all, in a city, here are all the jewelry shops, or here are all the, you know, camera shops, or here are all the fashion shops. They tend to cluster around. I think you'll kind of find, even though technically you can move stuff around, I think you're just, there's a friction between just even, like, you know, having different wallets and then moving stuff around. So we'll see. Cool. I think we'll better leave it. We'll leave it there, because, you know, we know we can talk forever otherwise. Excellent. Thank you very much, Ilya, for your time.
Thank you.
And if you want to get hold of Ilya, you can find him. We'll put his Twitter in the show notes. But thanks for listening or watching, or listening and watching, I suppose, to Dapp Happy issue 14. We are doing this regularly to keep track of what's going on in the world of dApps and smart contract blockchains and all that sort of stuff, which is constantly changing. So we have too much material to be dealing with. but we hope you find this stuff interesting, informative to some degree, and useful as well. So thanks for listening. Please do subscribe across the various platforms, and come back next time to see what we're talking about. See you soon.
Thank you.